can send us email at mail, M-A-I-L, at democracynow.org, or job at democracynow.org. I'll be in Santa Fe on March 1st. Look forward to seeing people there. And on March 18th, here in New York, with Harry Belafonte. Go to our website and check out the details. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. As we usually do on these Tuesday evenings, spending an hour or so taking a somewhat skeptical and cynical look at the world events, local events, national events, galactic events, what have you. And of course, getting feedback, which is the most fun, otw@2600.com, and maybe one day again on the telephone. I'm told that we'll have a delay system at the end of the month. We'll see. I've been holding my breath now for a year. We'll see. Be nice to hear some cheerful voices again. Maybe we can even do it over Skype. It'll sound like you're in the next room. Won't that be scary? Well, you know, what really kind of scares me is, I mentioned this last week, how we had a blizzard, which I guess was about 10 days ago now. And even last week, a mere 2 or 3 days after it happened, I was incredulous at how quickly it was melting. Well, you know what? It's all gone. We got something like 26.9 inches. Is that what they got in Central Park? The most ever recorded in a single snowfall. The biggest blizzard in history. And it's all gone. It all melted already. And we didn't even have any rain. That's the incredible thing. Think about what kind of temperatures you have for 26.9 inches of snow to melt that quickly without any rain. It's disgusting. It's pathetic. If there was somebody I could write to, some agency in charge of this, believe me, I would be first in line. But nobody seems to want to take responsibility for this either. It's really, it's very sad. We got some mail from a listener up in New Brunswick, Canada. This comes from Kurt in St. John. I'm writing from the province of New Brunswick. I have to say, this has been the most disappointing winter of my entire life. We literally got our first real snowfall in January on the 30th. And there are forecasts of warm temperatures and rain. What is going on here? I take photographs as a hobby, and I've been eagerly awaiting heavy snowfall and storms so I can go out and shoot some nice winter landscapes, but it barely looks like winter here. It's truly bizarre. Well, Kirk, you're not alone. And it's, I guess, somewhat comforting to know that people up in Canada, are also complaining about the very mild and bizarre winter that we've had. It's almost like this blizzard was sort of something thrown at us to sort of, calm us down. Oh, no snow? Here, here's some snow. There, take the snow. Okay, we're taking it back now. It's all over. There, you had your winter. And now spring training is opening up for baseball, so we're losing precious moments here to have a really cold, bitter... Well, it was kind of cold and bitter the last few days, but no moisture, of course. But I just think it's a wasted opportunity. It really is. Well, speaking of baseball, though, this is kind of interesting. I don't know how many people are aware of this. There's this new thing happening this year. In fact, I think it's starting in about 9 days, called the World Baseball Classic. Now, normally, I am just not a sports person at all. I just shy away from all that. Bad memories from school, and it's just the whole mass cheering mentality in stadiums, everybody dressing the same, just kind of rubs me the wrong way. But baseball's an interesting game. It's an interesting game because you never know when it's going to end. The power is always with one person. It's a one-on-one face-off, pitcher versus batter, and there's almost an infinite number of possibilities, and there's no clock. I just like that a lot. So you combine that with the other thing I like, which is international competition, like the World Cup, which is coming up later this year, where you see teams from different countries competing against other teams from other countries, and you see who's better, see how they play differently, see how their fans treat them, learn a little bit about their countries, that kind of thing. While we may go to war about various things, we all know how to play soccer, apparently. That should be a language. Okay, so now they're doing that for the first time ever with baseball. Yeah, and it's going to be taking place, I believe, in Japan, Mexico, and the United States. And it all starts next week. It's called the World Baseball Classic. It's got teams from, of course, the States, Japan, Mexico, Cuba even. In fact, there was some controversy about the Cuban team not being allowed in the United States. I don't know what they thought they were going to do, but apparently that's been resolved, so they will be allowed in to play against the United States and other teams. It's just going to be fascinating to see a true World Series for the first time. It's not a World Series when it's, Pittsburgh versus Cincinnati. I'm sorry, it just doesn't do it for me. Now, true, if nobody else knows how to play the game, then that's what you have to settle for. But obviously, other countries are into this. Central America, South America, the Caribbean, various parts of Asia, and things like that. So that's a true World Series, and that starts next week. I don't know if there's going to be any kind of media coverage, but we'd sure like to find out if there is. Let's see, what else? A couple other bits of mail that I'd like to go over. Again, our email address, otw@2600.com. Dear Off the Wall, I was at work listening to the latest off-the-wall Padcast. Oh, you're the guy who renamed it. Okay. Padcast. I like that. Portable audio device. That's what pad is, as opposed to podcast. Padcast. Okay. And at first I was astonished by the immense greatness at the higher quality provided. I think you're referring to the sound, right? Because I know you're not referring to the speech. Yeah, the sound, we just went to a higher bandwidth, higher quality sound, so I think it's equivalent to FM. If you download the show from anywhere in the world, you'll now hear what it sounds like as if you were listening to the radio. Probably better, because you won't get any static. Okay, continuing. I was amazed by the high quality provided, and then, yet again, I was amazed at the immense hilarity of the show. Well, we try. We try to entertain the people. I'm sure that many people took offense, as it was a pretty heavy show, even by Canadian standards, but I laughed my ass off, and that's all that matters. I'm kind of glad you left the Cheney issue alone, as everyone else is joking pretty hard about it, and to be honest, I feel sorry for him. I still think he's a douchebag. Can I say that on the air? Yeah, that's okay. But I think he was just drinking and playing with guns. It's confirmed I can say it. Okay, good. Thank you. Anyway, he was just drinking and playing with guns. What's wrong with that? Awesome show. You're a beacon for a community of free thinkers. Signed, Dave from Hamilton. Funny how all our listeners seem to be in Canada. Thanks very much for writing in. He also had a question about, this is an off-the-hook question. People are always mixing and matching here. Wants to know why he didn't get a pledge invoice from the December pledge. You know, don't get me started. Don't get me started on how these pledge drives, how they follow up on things at the other station, at this station. If you didn't get a reminder, call the station. If you didn't get what you pledged for, call the station. We do our best, but sometimes bureaucracy or just plain nitwittedness gets in the way, and, well, it's just the nature of the beast, I guess. Yes, you mentioned last week's show, and, you know, I tried. I really did try. I tried to offend people, and not a single person took offense. Damn it. I mean, I tried. I went after the biggest organized religions. I even went after atheism. And I do consider that to be somewhat of a religion, because it involves faith in the lack of the Almighty. And I think the only true thing anybody can say with certainty is that they don't know what's going on. I guess that makes me an agnostic or something. I don't like to put labels on things, but how anybody can say that they have it all figured out, I just don't get it. At some point, you have to say, well, it's because that's what I believe, and just hinge it on that. But nobody can point to any evidence. You can point to evidence that says that something, there is no evidence to indicate that a particular thing exists, but there's no evidence to indicate that a particular thing does not exist either, because there's no evidence. It's all a big secret. No one knows what's really going on. All we know is what's around us on a day-to-day basis. And once you resolve that, once that's all resolved in your mind, and you don't obsess over it, you can sort of live in some degree of harmony. But when you start taking offense when someone says something that you think your God might be upset at, or, you know, some deity someplace, his image is being tarnished by somebody in a different part of the world, and you have to get vengeance for that, it just turns into a big circus, and it never stops. And any chance of finding out what we're really supposed to be doing here is forever lost. And I feel that's what the world has been experiencing now for quite some time. So you want to look at why we're in the shape we're in? Look to organized religion. Look to the massive brainwashing and all the other things that have been going on over the eons. And by the same token, they feed on the uncertainty. They feed on that uncertainty. So if you're somebody that latches onto a religion and that religion tells you, this is what's going to happen to you after you die. You're going to be all taken care of. There's going to be pearly gates or a bunch of virgins or what have you. It's all going to be a big party. Or you're going to move on and transcend yourself into some other light being or something like that. Or you're going to be reincarnated and get to do the whole damn thing over again until you get it right. And some people are even comfortable with the notion of sitting in a box and rotting and being eaten by worms. You know, that's very peaceful to some people. Once you have it in your mind that this is what happens, then you can focus on the rest of your life. You're no longer afraid. You're not afraid of how it's all going to end. So the organized religion people, they latch on to that fear. And they comfort you with the facts that there's absolutely no proof of, no matter what. So somehow, the secret is somehow to be comforted by the fact that nobody knows, and that anything is possible. It's tough. It's tough to be comforted by such doubt and vagueness. But it's also something that you're likely to learn a lot more from other people by discussing things, not take offense, because your particular way of looking at the way the world is made up is not being insulted. Of course, we've heard a lot about this over the past several weeks. And that, of course, has led to me wanting nothing more than to insult all organized religion and all people who are certain as to exactly how things are going to turn out and how things exist today. But I'm really disappointed nobody took offense. I'm really disappointed. Our audience is just too damn sophisticated. Okay, but I do have another song. And in fact, I'd like to make this a feature. Until the FCC tells me not to. Or somebody else. Songs that offend some religion someplace. I'm not talking about hate songs. I'm not talking about things that just are designed to foster contempt or anything like that. I'm talking about things that provide sort of a gentle mockery of one organized religion or another. We played Christianity is Stupid last week. We played a National Lampoon piece. I think some people might have fallen for. And I think we played a Donner Party piece for a religion that doesn't even exist. So there are a lot of songs out there, a lot of things that maybe one day, if we keep extending this whole we must not offend anybody mentality, maybe one day we won't be able to play these songs. So by playing them now, at least they're out there. And they're on the internet, and when they're on the internet, they can never go anyplace. So again, if you have songs, and they have to be clean, they can't be filled with hate, please send us your suggestions, otw@2600.com. We'll be back in a moment.
Kind of wow.
You have to let go.
pony.
With a tongue like a cow, she could make you go wow.
Bowdy booty right away. That's the way they go. Every day, whenever their mamas take them to a show. The popcorn, please. There's nothing like old gambling girls with her hand in the box when she's on her knees.
She was on her knees, my little gambling girl.
And the little white dress,
gambling girl.
And yet the confess,
gambling girl.
I got one for a cousin.
I love how they go. So send me a dime.
Okay, of course, that's the classic song from Frank Zappa, Catholic Girls. You know, I used to hear that on commercial radio way back. Yeah, can you imagine if you played that on commercial radio these days? It'd be riots. Now, it probably wouldn't be riots, but I'm sure somebody, someplace, would raise an objection, and everybody would react with ultra paranoia instead of just saying, yeah, okay, so what? It's a funny song. And good music, too. I think Frank Zappa might be my source for a bunch of these mockery-type songs, which hopefully won't offend anybody, but if they do, well, I suggest getting a thicker skin or something. I get offended every day. Every day things happen that offend me. Nobody really cares. You know, I see stupidity all around me. Every time I see an SUV, it's like a nail in my heart. But, who's going to listen? Well, speaking of people taking offense, we have the whole Prophet Muhammad cartoon thing continuing to rage. Last week, of course, I actually drew a picture of the Prophet Muhammad right here in the studio. It was a stick figure. It wasn't much of a picture. And then I ripped it up on the air, and not only that, I left it here. Didn't even take it with me. I think that was the biggest offense of all, littering in the station. Anyway, the Philadelphia Inquirer was the first major American newspaper to publish any of the caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. They did it a week ago, Saturday. And that prompted a small protest outside the newspaper's offices. About 24 demonstrators holding signs reading No to Hate and Peaceful Protest for Religious Tolerance dispersed after about an hour. The organizers said they would be back on Friday unless they received an apology. 24 demonstrators. Not very many. Not very many. And I'm sure there are a lot more people that could potentially be offended by something like that. Amanda Bennett, the editor of the Inquirer, said the decision to publish the caricatures came after several days of internal deliberation. There's a lot of this internal deliberation going on. Most of it is not going particularly well. The New York Press, it's one of those free weeklies that is distributed in New York City. They were supposed to print the cartoons, and their editor told them not to at the last minute, and the staff walked out. They walked out in protest. And it's funny to see how this is being reported in various places. Left-wing newspapers and websites are saying that the staff that walked out are ultra-conservative, right-wing Republicans. I mean, come on. You can say a lot of things about the New York Press, but right-wing Republicans? I don't think so. I think the left has yet to find solid ground to stand on in this particular arena. It's really been very disappointing. I find myself siding with the right wing on this, and this it's not what I want to be doing. You know, I don't want to be in that place. But come on, you got to wake up. Can't tell people, no, you can't say that. You can't talk about this. You can't draw that. You can't show that. Because somebody someplace might be offended. No, that's not what I signed on for. Anyway, continuing with this story. The editors of the Philadelphia Inquirer drew on the newspaper's history of publishing stark images that some readers find offensive, including a grisly photo of civilian contractors who were burned to death in Fallujah, Iraq, back in March 2004. When it became clear the caricatures were becoming more and not less newsworthy, Ms. Bennett said the editors decided to publish one cartoon a week ago Saturday so that readers would be better informed about the controversy. There's been a whole history of newspapers publishing things that people would find controversial and offensive. My view is that we need to publish it for a good news reason. We need to publish in context, and we need to explain to readers why we did it. One small New York daily that some people might not even know about, the New York Sun, talk about ultra-right wing, there you go. They published two of the cartoons the Thursday before. This is interesting. The paper's editor, Seth Lipsky, hung up on a reporter on Monday when contacted for comment. I guess they're kind of a grouchy paper. And, of course, the cartoons have been widely circulated on the Internet. You can find them, I think, on Wikipedia now. Other major American newspapers, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, all did not publish any of the caricatures. Representatives said the story could be told effectively without publishing images that many would find offensive. You know, every time I see George Bush's face, I'm offended. Give me a break. Maybe if you published the damn things, people would say, this is what people are dying for? This is what hundreds of thousands of people are marching against? I mean, I've seen all of them. I've seen all of them. And yeah, you know, a couple of them you could be offended by. Yeah, offended. Deal with it. Deal with being offended. Your religion sucks. There, insert your religion there. I just offended you. You're going to live. And hopefully I will too. I mean, we just have to grow up a little bit. I was watching CNN the other day. And they were doing a story about the latest protest, which I think was taking place in Libya, outside the Italian embassy, which was being burned again. And I think people died in Libya because the police moved in against them. And the reason why they were protesting against the Italians was because some member of parliament or somebody decided to exercise his freedom of speech in a particular way by wearing a t-shirt with one of the cartoons on it. You know, I know people who have been tattooed. I mean, this is insane. They tattooed one of the cartoons onto them. I mean, that's going over. Nothing is worth tattooing yourself over. I'm sorry. But this guy's just wearing a t-shirt. And in a very public display, he unbuttons his shirt, and there it is, the t-shirt. Except CNN decides to digitize out the image of the cartoon on the guy's shirt. I mean, where is this going to end? It's not something obscene. It's something that some people might find offensive. And you can say that of so many different things. And maybe talking about it, maybe that's offensive too. So we shouldn't talk about it either. The European media should consider a voluntary code of conduct to avoid a repeat of the furor caused by the publication across Europe of cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. That's according to an EU commissioner. His name is Franco Frattini. He's a European Justice and Security Commissioner. And in an interview with Britain's Daily Telegraph, he said such a self-regulating charter would encourage the media to show prudence when covering religion. The former Italian foreign minister said he had never suggested imposing a code of conduct on the press, nor did the European Commission have any plans or powers for EU regulation in this area. He said he had offered to facilitate a dialogue between journalist organizations and religious leaders. By adopting a voluntary charter, the press will give the Muslim world the message, we are aware of the consequences of exercising the right of free expression. We can and we are ready to self-regulate that right. Self-regulate that right. My God. Newspapers that have published images say they are exercising their right to freedom of speech, while critics say the cartoons are deliberately offensive. Depicting the Prophet Muhammad is prohibited by Islam. And you know, I would say virtually everybody protesting against these have never seen them. Just the mere fact that they exist is enough. According to Frattini, millions of Muslims in Europe felt humiliated by the cartoons. I don't know. I wouldn't feel humiliated by somebody mocking you or mocking your prophet. I feel humiliated by people marching in the streets of London dressed as suicide bombers saying, kill the people who drew the cartoons. You know, this wasn't just one or two people doing this. I saw these demonstrations on television. A number of people were marching around threatening violence. And they got away with it. That's okay. That's fine. It's okay. Light fires. Cause all sorts of mayhem. But the thing that humiliated them were the cartoons. Please. Hundreds of Muslim protesters brandishing sticks and hurling stones attacked the U.S. Embassy in Indonesia on Sunday, claiming the United States was on a mission to destroy Islam. Well, you know, that might be true. That might be true. But the U.S. is not going around publishing the cartoons, which I think is to their detriment. The protesters were angry at the publication of the cartoons. And the rowdy scene showed how America is often blamed for many of the perceived injustices felt in the Islamic world. Why do you think that is? Maybe invading their countries, that could lead to sort of that... generalization there. The U.S. Embassy condemned the violence, saying it was a premeditated event staged for television by a small group that seeks to disrupt the relationship between the United States and Indonesia. Shouting anti-U.S. slogans, about 400 people arrived at the heavily fortified mission in the center of Jakarta, marching behind a banner that read, "We are ready to attack the enemies of the Prophet." They then tried to storm the gates, brandishing wooden staves and lobbing stones. They set fire to U.S. flags. Who sells U.S. flags over in these places? That's what I'd like to know. How do they do this? Somebody's making a lot of money selling U.S. flags that get burned, and now Danish flags too, I guess. But somebody has to make them. Maybe this whole thing is just staged by the flag industry. You ever think of that? They also set fire to a poster of U.S. President George W. Bush. And you know, what if that to us was something sacred? Did they check? Did they ask? Did they say, this might offend people in other parts of the world? We can't burn a poster of George W. Bush. Let's check first. It doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. There are things printed in newspapers all around the world that offend everybody all around the world all the time. All right, so that's Indonesia. Just never seems to stop, does it? And then you had this case. And this, I guess, kind of shows how I can never agree with anybody on anything, because the people I agree with on one issue, I'll totally disagree with on another. That's why I'm forever the outcast. Right-wing British historian David Irving pleaded guilty yesterday to denying the Holocaust and was sentenced to 3 years in prison in Austria. Even after conceding, he wrongly said there were no Nazi gas chambers at the Auschwitz concentration camp. I made a mistake when I said there were no gas chambers at Auschwitz, he told the court before his sentencing, where he faced up to 10 years in prison. He also expressed sorrow for all the innocent people who died during the Second World War, but he insisted he never wrote a book about the Holocaust, which he called just a fragment of my area of interest. He never wrote a book about it. Well, regardless. In no way did I deny the killings of millions of people by the Nazis, testified Irving, who has written nearly 30 books. Irving is 67 years old. He's been in custody since his November arrest on charges stemming from two speeches he gave in Austria in 1989, in which he was accused of denying the Nazis' extermination of 6 million Jews. He has contended that most of those who died at concentration camps, such as Auschwitz, succumbed to diseases such as typhus rather than execution. This, to me, is a fascinating case, where some guy says something that's extremely unpopular, something that I think is pretty easily disproven as well, and he's sent to prison for expressing these opinions, which is really all they are, is opinions. But you know, in most parts of Europe, this is backed. Imprisoning somebody for denying that the Holocaust took place seems like a perfectly correct thing to do. And it just seems to me that that's in complete contradiction to the people who want to print pictures of Prophet Muhammad or cartoons and say, well, it's because of freedom of speech. Well, this is freedom of speech, too. And I shouldn't have to say, oh, but it's horrible speech. It's not something that I agree with. Yeah, you know, that's a given. It's free speech either way. Now, of course, inciting a new Nazi movement or something, that's a horse of a different color. And I think he was giving speeches before various people that, well, I don't know what these people were about to do. But from what I can see, that's not what he was being charged with. He's being charged with simply having the opinion, simply writing the words. And that just doesn't cut it for me. Sentence a guy for, I mean, you're making him into a martyr for one thing. If Austria felt so strongly about this, why not simply bar him from coming into their country again? Gonna spread things, spread lies about our past? Then stay away from us. But putting him in prison? Keeping him in the country for another 3 years? I don't know. I seem to recall something like that happening a number of years ago, where somebody was put into prison and later came out and was a whole lot stronger and more popular and did a lot of bad things. Idiots are best left ignored until they do something that really threatens you. And speech, I don't think, can do that. It's so easy to prove that the Holocaust took place. This is not something that's really open to that much debate. People who say it didn't take place are generally idiots. And you just expose that fact, you can move on. Put them in prison, silence them. Hey, maybe there's something there. Maybe they're covering something up. That's what people will start saying. Stupid move, I think. Stupid move. And something else. And this is the most troubling for me, because it puts me in a very awkward position, a position where I'm actually agreeing with George W. Bush. And not only that, it's not like I'm agreeing with him, hey, it's daytime or it's nighttime. You know, we can all agree with him when he says that. Why does he say that anyway? This is a case, though, where he's saying something that most people disagree with him on, passionately, and I'm in his corner. Earlier today, Bush strongly defended a deal that would let a United Arab Emirates-based company run 6 major U.S. seaports, telling reporters he would veto any bill to hold up the agreement. Now, this is a very interesting case, because apparently this company from United Arab Emirates has acquired the firm that directs commercial operations at various ports in the United States. Their name is Dubai Ports World, and they will now be in charge of those operations. Now, the amazing thing is, something like 90% of the American public is fiercely against this. Democrats, Republicans, they're all speaking out. Charles Schumer. Democratic Senator Charles Schumer. No one can understand it, Democrat or Republican. Average citizens everywhere we go are stopping us and saying, what is going on? I think that's probably true every day, though. And basically what it boils down to is that they don't want Arabs to be in charge of security or ports or anything remotely resembling that. Listen to what Susan Collins, a Maine Republican and a chairwoman of the Senate Government Affairs and Homeland Security Committee, said. Although the United Arab Emirates is an ally in the war on terrorism, the country has historically been used as a base of terrorist operations and financing. Two Republican governors, George Pataki of New York and Robert Ehrlich of Maryland, have indicated they may try to cancel port lease arrangements. All this because it's an Arab-based company. They're not preempting security arrangements made in this country. They're not going to say, well, you guys aren't allowed in here, there can't be any kind of oversight. No, it's simply because this is an Arab company. Nothing more. And we don't trust any of them. That's what these people are saying. A Dubai Ports World spokesman said yesterday the firm has received all the necessary regulatory approvals and that the security systems in place at the ports would only get better under the new management. We intend to maintain or enhance current security arrangements, and this is business as usual for the P&O terminals. A port security expert, not an employee, a port security expert, I don't know why they're... Oh, here's their name. Kim Peterson, head of Sea Secure, which is a U.S.-based maritime security company, said fears that the agreement would reduce U.S. security are based on bigotry against Arabs and that shameless politicians are creating an issue they think will resonate with the public. This whole notion that Dubai is going to control or set standards for U.S. ports is factually false, she said, or he said. I'm not sure. Kim could be either way. So that's pretty disgraceful, if you ask me. I mean, they're basing this on nothing more than where the company is based. Nothing more on the kind of people that are in the company. I've seen this before, and it's really interesting to see it develop. After 9/11, of course, there was a lot of suspicion involving various things the Saudi government did. And this resulted in all sorts of anti-Saudi propaganda being pushed around by the opponents of Bush, which is all fine and dandy, but doesn't take into account the bigger picture, that this isn't about one country versus another country. This is about corrupt people in certain positions of power all around the world. And to say you don't trust these people because they're Arab is as stupid as saying you don't trust somebody because they're American. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting. I'm actually on Bush's side on this. I can't figure out why he's on his side on this. I really can't. But I'm fascinated to see what's going to happen here. He might actually veto this. All right, here's something else that's kind of bizarre. I just found out about this today. This goes to show the world is a wacky place. Wearing vests covered in military patches, a band of motorcyclists rolls around the country from one soldier's funeral to another, cheering respectfully to overshadow jeers from church protesters. You know, when I first heard about this, I first heard there were protests at military funerals, I was like, oh, God, is this an anti-war protester tactic? Because it's a really dumb one if it is. Sometimes the things people that are on my side, sometimes the things they do make me wince. And showing up at a funeral to protest the war, that would be one of them. But no, that's not what's happening here. Do you know what these people are doing? They're showing up to protest against homosexuals. They're coming to military funerals to protest against gay people. And you have these motorcyclists that are going around defending the gay people, I guess, but also defending the people who are trying to have a nice, peaceful funeral. It's really bizarre. They call themselves the Patrol Guard Riders. I'm sorry, the Patriot Guard Riders. Patriot Guard Riders. And they are more than 5,000 strong, forming to counter anti-gay protest held by our friend, the Reverend Fred Phelps. Goes to military funerals. He believes American deaths in Iraq, and this is precious, listen to this, American deaths in Iraq are divine punishment for a country that he says harbors homosexuals. His protesters carry signs thanking God for so-called IEDs, explosives that are a major killer of soldiers in Iraq. Talk about lunatics! Of course, we don't lock this guy up. He's a madman. He's out of his mind. We all know this. Anyway, the bikers shield the families of dead soldiers from the protesters and overshadow the jeers with patriotic chants and a sea of red, white, and blue flags. I mean, it's really kind of weird because you have the ultra-right wing and then you have sort of the right wing fighting against the ultra-right wing. I don't see anybody else really represented here. Patriot Guard. Wow. So yeah, that's just goes to show how weird things can get sometimes. And last week, we didn't mention this last week because we didn't have time. We were too busy trying to offend people unsuccessfully. And apparently, the ABC television network was very concerned that they might offend somebody. So concerned, in fact, that during the Super Bowl halftime show, with memories of Janet Jackson fresh in their minds, they actually decided to censor a couple of lines from Rolling Stones songs. Yeah, two sexually explicit lyrics were excised from the Rock Legends performance a week ago Sunday. And this is the crazy thing. This is the crazy thing. In Start Me Up, ABC's editors silenced one word, a reference to a woman's sexual sway over a dead man. The line is, she can make a dead man come, okay? So we don't have to, like, play these silly little games. I don't understand this. Why is a printed story about this? Why are they pussyfooting around, dancing around the issue, not saying the actual word, which is not even one of the words you can't say? You see how crazy this gets? Well, this might offend somebody, and because they think it might offend somebody, we're not going to tell you what it is that they cut out, because that might offend somebody that we're trying not to offend. Well, screw that. Offend people. I mean, we have to lighten up. Being offended isn't necessarily a bad thing. Gives me material to talk about. Oh, and let me continue. Don't want to just leave it at that. There were two songs. The lyrics for Rough Justice included a synonym for rooster. A synonym for rooster. They couldn't say cock, because that could be taken in the wrong way. They have to say a synonym for rooster. Oh, my God. And the network deemed that worth cutting out. This is what it's coming to. First, there's a list of words you can't say. Now there's words that might be able to be interpreted in a certain way that aren't the words that you're not allowed to say, but they could offend somebody anyway, so we're not going to say those either. And then anybody talking about it, they shouldn't say the words that might be offensive to somebody, because that might offend somebody as well. And I probably shouldn't even be reading this story, because it's just going to bring back bad memories. So yeah, that was a silliness. I still don't see what the big deal over Janet Jackson's breast was, but That's just me, I guess. In Brockton, Massachusetts, a 6-year-old boy is getting a lesson on the meaning of sexual harassment long before he'll be able to spell it. The first grader was suspended for 3 days for sexual harassment after he put 2 fingers inside a classmate's waistband, according to school officials. The boy told his mother that he only touched the girl's shirt after the girl touched him. Oh, my God! Call the police! Call the sex crimes unit! This is unbelievable. Dr. Elizabeth Berger, a Philadelphia area child psychiatrist, said this case seems to be an overzealous attempt to ensure students feel safe in school after years in which society was not attentive enough. Brockton school officials have not commented beyond a statement from the superintendent saying that sexual harassment charges are always investigated and officials are trained to deal with them. The kid is 6 years old. My God. First graders who repeatedly touch classmates need to be disciplined and taught what's appropriate. That's according to Nan Stein, a senior research scientist at the Center for Research on Women at Wellesley College. But don't call the apparent discipline problem sexual harassment because first graders just don't get it, she said. There have been similar cases. In 1996, a New York second grader was suspended for kissing a girl and ripping a button off her skirt. An idea the boy said he got from his favorite book, Corduroy, about a bear with a missing button. Earlier that year, a Lexington, North Carolina 6-year-old was separated from his class after kissing a classmate on the cheek. Oh, my God. Well, certainly separating them, making a big fuss, having it appear in international news, that'll nip this in the bud, won't it? That'll make those kids grow up nice and well-adjusted. Okay, well, talking about overreaction to certain things, this is kind of a funny incident, and this is also why you got to love the British. Just because they come up with this kind of thing all the time. This guy sent out, you know, I should have done this when I was going across the ocean. I don't know why I didn't do this. Didn't even think of it. But this guy was right off the coast here on Long Island. And he stuck a note in a plastic bottle. In fact, he did it to 5 bottles and threw it into the ocean. He was a boat captain, and he actually got a reply all the way from England. Harvey Bennett got this reply from somebody in England who found the bottle. I recently found your bottle while taking a scenic walk on the beach by Poole Harbor. While you may consider this some profound experiment on the path and speed of oceanic currents, I have another name for it, litter. You Americans don't seem to be happy unless you are mucking about somewhere. That letter is written by Henry Bigglesworth of Bournemouth in the southern county of Dorset. Wow. That is unbelievable. Goes all the way across the ocean and gets that kind of a reply. And another reason why you have to love England, this story coming out of Scotland, a pet dog's favorite tatty old sofa has been saved after an unusual petition attracted support from around the world. That's right, Levi is the dog's name. Levi's owner wanted to throw the smelly and chewed sofa out when she moved home in Bucky Moray. The bone of contention doubled as the Rhodesian Ridgeback's bed. An online petition started by her partner was signed by more than 100 objectors, so Miss Jackson allowed the sofa to move home, to move house with them as well. That's all it took was an online petition, 100 people, and the dog gets to keep his ratty old sofa. Goes to show you the power of the net. And finally, as news from England here, or news from the UK, stories that the rest of us might wonder, why do people care? Well, this year's FA Cup final, and of course people care about that, will be played once again in Cardiff, that's in Wales, because the new Wembley Stadium will not be ready in time. That's according to the English Football Association announcing that today. I can confirm that this season's FA Cup final will be held at the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff on May 13th. The delay is a major embarrassment to the FA, who had hoped to return the showpiece event to Wembley, which hosted finals between 1923 and 2000. And for the last 5 years, they've been in Cardiff. I don't know why that's a major embarrassment, why it's such a big deal, or even why it's there. Why don't they move it around? Why does it always have to be at Wembley? Wembley is in London. Why does it always have to be at that one particular stadium? And why does it have to also be in Cardiff if it's not in Wembley? Don't they have stadiums all over the country? Anyway, the original Wembley, probably the most famous soccer stadium in the world, was demolished in 2000. The redevelopment of the site in northwest London has been hampered by problems and delays, although the operators said last May that they still expected to open it on time. And so now there's this whole big controversy, because it's still over there in Wales. And that's what people are talking about overseas. Well, we're almost out of time here, so again, I want to just remind people to write to us at otw@2600.com, because we certainly would like to hear from you with all sorts of comments, ideas. Don't forget to send in those, how should I say, offensive songs? I don't really want them to be offensive. No, actually, I do. I do. Because everything offends somebody, and I'm tired of being careful, or trying to be careful, not that I ever really was, but just having people all around saying, no, this might offend somebody. Send us your songs that you think will offend some religious or anti-religious type person anywhere. And again, I stress, not songs that just rely on hatred or any kind of caricature that is offensive. Oh, wait, what did I just say? You know what I mean. Things that simply give you another perspective. And we're going to try to be as even as possible on this. We're going to try and get to everybody at some point. But we have to know what's out there. We have to know what kinds of songs, bits of material exist. All right. We'll see you again next week. Same time, same place. Again, otw@2600.com. Say that you're pop. Okay. And for some reason, our CD player miscued there, so I'm just going to buy a little bit more time by saying that this is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
Oh, you tell me that your last good dollar is gone, and you say that your pockets are bare. And you tell me that your clothes are tattered and torn, and nobody seems to care. Now don't tell me your troubles. No, I don't have the time to spare. But if you want to get together and fight, good buddy, that's what I want to hear. And you tell me that your job was taken away by a big old greasy machine. And you tell me that you don't collect no more pay, and your belly is growing lean. Now, if I had the jobs to give, you know I'd give them all away. But don't waste your breath calling out my name if you don't have nothing to say. And you tell me that you don't have nothing to do, and you keep on wasting your time. And you say when you want to get your family some food, you gotta spend it ain't really fine. Now it's a sin and a bloody shame about the way they're pushing you round. But when you decide not to take no more, you know I'll put my money down. 'Cause I've seen your kind many times before, and I'll see you many times again. Oh, but every bad thing that's happened to you has happened to better men. No, don't explain. lane that you've lost your way, that you've got no place to go. You've got a hand and a voice, and you're not alone, brother. That's all you need to know. And if you're still wondering what I'm trying to say, let me tell you what it's all about. Now nobody listens to a single man when he's walking round out and out. So if you're looking for an answer, he's standing there by your side. And you'll never really know how far you'll go till you join together and try. So you tell me that your last good dollar is gone, and you say that your pockets are bare. And you tell me that your clothes are tattered and torn, and nobody seems to care. Now don't tell me your troubles, no, I don't have the time to spare. But if you want to get together and fight, good buddy, that's what I want to hear.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.